about an hour later, I basically found myself at the top of this canyon, and there was just this little place that looked over kind of our valley that we had. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there, and a dog was running around. She was happy. And I had my music on, and in just one brief moment, it was, it's still kind of surreal to me, but in one brief moment of irrational thinking, I just thought to myself, this isn't worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I reached in my center console and I grabbed my pistol, I loaded it, and I put it to my head and pulled the trigger.
Stuff going on, and people are beginning to feel some of the emotions that come from stress and anxiety, depression, anger in some cases, frustration. I think we all, you know, have experienced that here in the United States over the last few months since the election. But in general, all over the world, we all have experienced emotional upheavals. Sometimes they leave scars, sometimes we overcome them, but there's also something else that some of us may be experiencing, but perhaps we haven't been accurately diagnosed. And I'm talking about the condition of a bipolar disorder. It's a word that has come out a lot lately over the last few years, and still and yet a lot of people aren't being diagnosed properly, or if they have been diagnosed, they're struggling with the right medication. And sometimes I guess there are those who might have family members that might be suffering from the bipolar disorder, and they're not quite sure how to deal with it. And yet there are still others who have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and they have figured out how to carve out a life, how to move forward and thrive. And Justin Peck happens to be just one of those people. Justin Peck is an expert on the subject of bipolar disorder, as he has been living with a class 1 diagnosis for well over a decade now. He has just written a book called Bulletproof. It's a memoir that tells all about his experiences. Justin is a professional with Lucas Oil Series. He's an off-road race car driver and a team owner. And he is a firsthand expert of what it's like to be in the world of mental health. And he's here with us today to share with us his story. Thank you, Justin, for being on What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy. It's wonderful to have you here today.
Thank you so much. It's been a great opportunity for sure.
Well, you know, first of all, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think a lot of people, when it comes to mental health, no one wants to talk about it a lot, or if they do it, they do it in whispers. Many times family members try to hide, you know, Uncle Theodore in the room. Don't bring him out when company comes out because he acts a little strange. But the reality is that bipolar disorder is something that's very prevalent in our society. What made you decide to write your story, the book Bulletproof, and tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be diagnosed?
Well, boy, that's three questions all in one right there. That's good. So the actual reasoning for the book was, it was probably 10 or so years ago, my youngest brother, he had overdosed and he had passed away. And so what I wanted to do after that is I wanted to give a written account of basically my life, something that I could write down that later my children could look at that and read it, and you know, my children could understand who their daddy was. So as I was writing, and you know, one chapter turned into two chapters, and you know, two turned into four, and four into eight, and the next thing you know, 8 years later, I finished a book. Mm. So, I mean, realistically, the book was based for the kids. As children, they don't ever really understand what parents are going through. I mean, they have a different perception of our parents than like normal day-to-day people that the adults deal with. And so I finished the book and sent it to an editor, and the editor said that she really liked it and it needed to be something that was promoted because I am able to talk about things that most people don't talk about.
Right.
And So how the diagnosis for me pretty much started. So it was 12 years ago. So woke up normal morning. It was a typical morning for me. I mean, it was no different than anything else. I'd felt a little down. I would maybe say that I felt tired and my body ached and those type of things, but just a normal work morning. It was 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I leaned over and I kissed my wife at the time. I kissed her and rolled out of bed and went up and kissed the children goodbye, like I'd always done. Went out back and grabbed my dog and threw my dog in the back seat, and we went to check on some job sites. So I had, about an hour later, I basically found myself at the top of this canyon, and there was this little place that looked over kind of our valley that we had. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there, and a dog was running around. She was happy. And I had my music on, and in just one brief moment, it was, it's still kind of surreal to me, but in one brief moment of irrational thinking, I just thought to myself, this isn't worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I reached in my center console and I grabbed my pistol, I loaded it, and I put it to my head and pulled the trigger.
Oh, my goodness.
There are very few moments in people's lives that ultimately define us, who we are. And I knew that was one of them. So I unchambered the bullet, thinking, how can I screw this up? How is that possible? And so I unchambered it, thinking that I didn't load it correctly. And when the bullet landed in my lap, I picked it up and looked at it, and you could see where the firing pin had actually hit the bullet. So, So the chances of that, like I'm not a huge gun guy by no means, but I've shot my fair, and I've never not one time had a bullet not go off other than that one. And that happened to be the one that was stuck to my head. So
that's amazing. I mean, after making that attempt and failing at that attempt, how did that make you feel?
Well, that's the crazy thing about this. And here again, please keep in mind that I didn't know that bipolar was even around. I had heard, 10, 15 years ago, I mean, people would kind of joke around and say, oh, but you're bipolar. Mm-hmm. And the conception of bipolar is you're angry at one minute and then you're mad or then you're sad the next. And that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So the crazy thing is I was in this depression and this tiredness and this body ache and no motivation whatsoever. Well, after I pulled the trigger, within 15 seconds after that, the adrenaline was so intense for me that it immediately pulled me out of this depression phase. And so that was kind of the call sign for me. That was the saying, hey, all right, what's going on? You can be one way one time, but you need this massive adrenaline rush to kind of pull yourself out. And so I as I was driving down the canyon, I called my doctor, and I felt the adrenaline going away and was starting to feel pretty bad. And so I called him and ended up meeting up with him, took a bunch of tests and did, filled out paperwork and stuff, and ultimately found that the diagnosis was the class 1 bipolar.
Now, it's interesting because I know you mentioned class 1 bipolar. What is class 1 bipolar?
Okay, so there are two different stages or types of bipolar disorder. So a class 2 would be something that someone would have a depressive state that would last, 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then they'll turn into a manic phase of maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So in that consideration, to me, that's a short-term Class one is typically the harder one to deal with, because I can be in a depressive state for 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side of that, I can be in a manic phase for a year. And so it's kind of hard. It's a little harder to diagnose, in my opinion, because when you're spinning really, really hard, when you're in the manic phase, you know, going for 6 to 7 to 8 months, people around you just think that it's you. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to actually put a finger on it.
You know, it's interesting because you got to a point where you thought that that's it. There's no more to live for. I just want to end it all. Do you recall what took you to that dark place? What caused you to go all the way down in that way?
Well, so there was, that's one thing about, from my experiences, from having the disorder, being blessed with the disorder, is that there's a lot of times that we don't have rational thinking. So my normal day-to-day life, rational thinking is, listen, like, I have responsibilities, children, I have all these other things that are very, very important to me, and so rational thinking says that you don't try to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. However, on the other side of that, every once in a while, we'll get irrational thinking. And my doctors and the medical professionals that I've been with, they've all told me that I don't assess risk and I don't assess consequence like the normal person. And so it's not necessarily that it brought me from, like, something, you know, specific brought me from a high down to a low to attempting suicide. It was more of being in a low place, not being able to get out of the low place, feeling, you know, overwhelmed and despair, and just not wanting to do it anymore.
You know, it's interesting because you hear about people saying that they're really, really depressed, and then they go through another stage where they're feeling really, really, really good. But you're right. Usually those are not stretched out. They're usually like little short periods here, short periods there. I have an acquaintance who is bipolar, and, you know, she's on medication now, but it took a long time for her to get properly diagnosed. And then after she was diagnosed, it took a long time to find the right medication so that she could even out her mood swings. What about you? Once you were diagnosed, what did you go through in order to find the right treatment plan so that you could be, you know, not have these huge ups and downs?
Well, for me, I have tried just about every single form of medication known to man for this. So I look back at when I originally had my first manic phase, and it was when I was 13, and I remember it very, very clear. And so, you got to think about back then, bipolar wasn't even a word in the dictionary. So, mm-hmm. So, you know, as I've went on and I've grown and I've understood what the disorder is about, we started prior to actually getting the bipolar diagnosis. There was a lot of depression, and there was a lot of months where I couldn't get out of bed, and so the doctor, they were prescribing me depression medication. Well, a lot of times the depression medication, like, it's worse for bipolar people. And so I went for a long time on trying, you know, 5, 6, 7 to 10 different forms of medication. And then once we kind of nailed it down to their, to the bipolar side of things, then we switched up medication, and it helped for a bit. So for the last, you know, 12 years or so, I have to switch medication every 6 months to a year, because my body just acclimates to it too quick.
Yes, that's kind of what had happened with my friend. Actually, her mother is a good friend of mine, and they went through this with her daughter. She was first diagnosed when she was in college. you know, around 19 or 20, and it took about 13 years to for her to kind of even out overall and to be able to hold a job and go through, you know, normal life, if there is such a thing as normal life. And it was interesting because she was a dancer, you know. Yes, fitness was a big part of her regime. And while we're talking about that, let me say right now we are talking to Justin Peck, and he's sharing with us his experience of being diagnosed as a bipolar class 1 disorder. And I'm glad we're talking about this because emotional wellness is so important. Just as I always say, wellness in general is important. And, you know, these days with the tight schedules that we all have, and I know I certainly have tight schedules, I like to take the time out to do my exercising, which is important for my mental health, either early in the morning or sometimes a little bit at night, usually after the sun goes down. And that means it's dark outside. And I just wanted to share with you listeners that the good thing is that I found a fantastic product that keeps me safe. And I'll tell you about it a little bit later. But for those of you who can take a look at this website, it's www.whoami-id.com. They have a selection of products that keep me safe and motivate me to work out even when the daylight hours are short. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the broadcast, but this is a fantastic product for runners, walkers, and cyclists. We'll talk more about it, but it's one of those products that's going to help you to be safe and be seen.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
With finding the right medications for you, and then you said every 6 months or so you have to make a change. How does your family deal with this, the medications and just the disorder in general?
Well, it's so I am a single man. I do live alone now. I have four amazing children. I've got working on four grandbabies now. Wow. I'm not old enough to have four grandkids, but you know, I have an amazing family. I mean, I have an amazing ex-wife. She's a really good friend of mine. And then, you know, my mother and my other brother that I have. So they've all known ever since I was little, like my mother and stuff. They knew that I was a little different. Now, my children, they just know me as Dad, of course. They know Dad's just a goofball. So it's my family deals with me they just know who I am. And so, you know, there's struggles with them sometimes. You know, when the kids want to come over and see me and I can't physically get out of bed or I have no motivation, they suffer a little bit. You know, it's, you know, when I don't get to see my mom as much or be able to do the things that I want to with them. And then also on the manic side, when I'm spinning really hard, they know that it's just, you know, Dad's crazy. He'll do anything. So, but for the most part, you know, they all understand what I go through. They understand, you know, who I am as a person, and they, you know, they love me for who I am.
And I guess that's a wonderful thing to have because so many people don't have that. So you're very blessed. I was looking at some of the information that you know, your agent sent me, and there was a question I had. They mentioned something about addictions. What was your addiction? Was it a substance abuse addiction, or was it an adrenaline addiction? What was the addiction, and how did you deal with that?
Well, I've always had an adrenaline addiction, so I was kind of, you know, I was a weird kid in school, and I get it. And that's, you know, I mean, that was just kind of part of my life. But there was certain things that I was always that kid growing up that if if there was something scary to do or someone, you know, like the boys needed to dare someone to do something, they always knew that they could point at me. I would always do it. I'd jump off the cliffs and I would always do all the crazy things. Where my addiction, the substance abuse addiction comes from is, so I've been racing professional stuff for a long time, you know, motorcycles to asphalt stuff to now in the off-road truck type circuit. So in that period of time, I've broken 78 bones. I've had 19 surgeries. I've got screws and plates and rods and cadaver parts and all sorts of things in my body. So because of that, when I would go into a surgery, they, of course, will give you pain medication when you leave. And what I had noticed that with the disorder, when I was able to take the pain medication, my mindset would be different and it would pull me out of this, the odd reality that I was in. It honestly made me feel better. And so I had a really bad crash at a race, like mid 1999. And, It was a big one. So I was in the hospital for quite some time, and so when I got out of the hospital, I was on pretty high doses of pain meds. And you know, the months went by. I should have been off of the pain meds, but you know, once the addiction starts, it slowly starts to consume you.
Wow.
And so I went through a phase of where I started depending on it. I started relying on it. And I went for about a year before I really got to the point where I knew that that there was something that was crazy. And so I ended up getting an opportunity to go film in Alaska. And so I was taking a lot of pain medication. No one knew. I've always been able to hide things quite well. And so so when I got the opportunity to go to Alaska for 45 days, you know, I packed up some film equipment and, you know, the things that I was going to go do down there. And when I made it to the airport, I had, you know, gave my wife a hug and said, okay, you know, I'm going to be gone for a bit. You know, you need to run the company. And I had, before I'd made it to the airport, I had made sure that I had at least, you know, 3 bottles of pain pills.
Right.
And so I make it to the airport. I'm sitting, you know, waiting for the call. And so I get first call to Anchorage, Alaska. So, you know, I'm a little nervous, you know, and kind of have the jitters. And then they had second call to Alaska. So I figured at that time I'd get up, I'd use the bathroom, and then I'd just go jump on the plane. And so I got up, I went into the bathroom, went into one of the stalls to actually take some pills before I got on the plane. And it was at that moment that I decided just enough is enough. And so I heard them over the intercom say third and final call for boarding. And I took, you know, 3 or 4 pills, I swallowed them. And then I took the rest of the pills that I had and dumped them down the toilet.
Boy, I'm telling you, when you make a decision, you make a decision.
it's pretty crazy. It's sometimes spooky sometimes because here again, I don't have the fear of consequence type thing. So
okay.
So I dumped everything down down the toilet and then just walked onto the airplane and got on and took off. So by the time I made it to Anchorage, Alaska, I realized, like, now what am I going to do? Because I'm literally out in the middle of nowhere. So I went from Anchorage, Alaska to a place called Aniak, Alaska. And then from Aniak, we went out like 800 miles out into the middle of the Alaskan wilderness.
Oh, my gosh.
And I went through probably one of the worst times of my entire life. I mean, I went through severe opiate withdrawals.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, of course I'm blaming it on the flu and I'm blaming it on, you know, it's just, you know, I don't feel well and it must be the different climates or whatever. So I went through 9 days. In that 9 days, I lost like 25 pounds. And we're so far out in the middle of nowhere that, like, medical attention, if you had a problem, you're going to die out there. Mm-hmm. And so I went through the withdrawals. It didn't kill me. And then, you know, I'd spent the rest of my time out there. And so it was, you know, I was lucky to be able to have that trip to go out to make that decision when I did, and then to not physically die in the withdrawal stage. Yes. But when I came back home, you know, I was clean and I was able to still progress in life and understand, you know, that I needed to be very careful when it came to opiate stuff and that type of addiction, because I'm susceptible to it.
Well, you know, actually, that story is kind of another example of one of your bulletproof experiences. I mean, that could have turned out disastrously, just like the gun to the head with the bullet that didn't fire. Any of those experiences could have actually taken your life. What is it that you think, because you have a profession that can be somewhat dangerous. What is it that you think attracted you to that profession and keeps you in that profession, knowing what you know now in terms of your disorder?
Well, so I've been racing for, geez, I think I'm going on 25 years now. So I've been racing a long time. And, you know, one of the, you know, we've talked about medication and we've talked about kind of what I do with that. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that the biggest medication for me, the thing that makes me feel the best, the thing that keeps me focused and puts me kind of in my right mindset is my helmet. So if I can, you know, I can be at the races, and the second that I put on my helmet over my face, it's like the world just stops for me. I'm super focused. I know the task at hand, and that's honestly what keeps me motivated. So, you know, racing is what it is. Like I said, I've broken a bunch of bones. I've actually physically died twice because of racing, because of crashes and stuff. So, you know, there are a lot of things that that I've been able to experience, you know, and I laugh about them because, you know, to me, it's just a normal story. It's just something that I've experienced, and you know, I think it's normal. But when I'm able to talk about these things, people just look at me and shake their head and go, man, like, you're crazy. And then my term back to that is like, I'm clinically crazy. I've got a doctor with a note that says I'm crazy. And then we laugh about it and everything's good. So,
well, you know, maintaining a sense of humor, I guess, in any situation is always important. And I wanted to take out the time right now to kind of talk about that in terms of me and maybe other people too. We're talking right now to Justin Peck, and he's sharing with us his experience being a class 1 bipolar, and he's written a book called Bulletproof that all of you should read. My goodness, the experiences in this book are uncanny, and I guess we all have experiences that we look back and say, how did we do that? And I wanted to share with the listeners that there's a product that I have been using that has really helped me feel better about some of the experiences I've had when it comes to maybe not making the best choices. I like to work out in the morning when it's dark, and sometimes in the evening when it's dark. Not a lot of light out there. And I have found out about a new product that I just wanted to share with you. It's from the company called Who Am I? And you got to check it out. Earlier, I gave you the URL. It's www.whoami-id.com. And it's a product that basically keeps me safe while I'm jogging and while I'm walking. I love it because I no longer worry about being seen, you know, when you're walking in the dark. It's good for jogging, for cycling, any kind of thing that takes you out sometimes at hours of the day that might be overcast or darker. And this product is great, has a great identity feature also. You can put a slip and put all your identity information inside the lead strips that are on your workout outfit. And it's fantastic. So click on the advertisement there on the show page and take a look at the product. It's www.whoami-id.com for those of you who are listening and not on the show page. And for those of you who are on the show page, or you can take a look at my expert page, and you'll see an ad there that will take you directly to this product. It's fantastic. It really will keep you safe because you want to make sure that you're safe and that you're seen. Justin, thank you so much for sharing what you've been sharing. It's really amazing to me that you decided to write a book about this, because so many people don't want to talk about this. Or if they are talking about it, it's the great family secret. Or they maybe one or two friends might know, but no one else knows. And here you have written this book for the whole world to write. What is it that you would like people to learn from the experiences that you share in your book, Bulletproof?
So growing up this through the whole thing, the hardest thing for me is, as I was a young kid, I was severely bullied, and I was picked on, and I was made fun of, and it's not because of anything other than my mind was just a little different than the kids around me, than my friends and my peers. And so I went through the majority of my life, for the first 30-something years of my life, knowing that I was different, that my thoughts were different than other people's. And so I always kept it to myself, and I was always very reserved in who I would talk to. I didn't have very many friends growing up. And so what that ended up doing for me is understanding and knowing from a very, very, very young age that the only person that I could depend on was myself. Hmm. And so when I was diagnosed with the disorder, it was embarrassing to me. It was because there's always been a stigma of mental disorder, and as the years have gone by, and as I've wrote this book, and I've got older, I've realized, you know what? There's not a stigma. There shouldn't be one. There should be people out there that are talking about this, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. there are. I've met a lot of people in my life. I've talked to a lot of people. I've shared my experiences and stories with a lot of people, and there isn't one person, okay, so I'm talking 100%, there isn't one person that has told me that they either know somebody with a mental disorder or they have a mental disorder. And so if you look at kind of the grand spectrum of things, you know, I mean, I think the statistic is one out of every four Americans have some type of mental disorder, but we don't talk about it because the past has always said that if you had one, you needed to be locked up. And so with me writing the book and me being very just honest and open and talking about things that just people don't talk about, I want to share my experiences because I want other people to see that a guy that looks normal from the outside is a little goofy on the inside, but I still have a voice. And I want to be able to convey that voice to as many people as I can to let them know that they have a voice as well. And if you're struggling and if you're having a hard time and if you're having that depression moment, to be able to talk about it with friends and family, talk about it with your tribe, the people that are close to you, if you can do that, then you can get over the bad parts of the disorder.
You know, I'm so glad that you shared that, because for whatever reason, there is this stigma. And I think that the thing that hurts the most is that people withdraw and go in. The families who are dealing with it, they withdraw and go in and don't talk with anyone about it. The individual who's going through it, who has the disorder, they stop talking about it, and then pretty soon no one's communicating. And I know from my own experience of having an anxiety disorder, the worst thing that can happen is to not talk about it and not to have that support when you do, because if for me, it would just get bigger than life. And I was diagnosed with anxiety disorder about 8 years ago, and it happened through an event. I didn't know that I had an anxiety disorder as a result of post-traumatic stress. That was not explained to me until many years later. And the symptoms that I had, I just kind of, you know, pushed them out to the side, no big deal, and so did my family. You know, that's just Lennis, right? You know, she always feels kind of weird when she wakes up in the morning. I used to feel like I was going straight downhill on a roller coaster with no restraints in the morning. And the only way I would feel better is if I had a cup of coffee. Now, that should have let me know right there something's wrong. But, you know, everybody drinks coffee. What's wrong with that? So, you know, I rationalized all of that. And it wasn't until I had an event where I had to go and see a doctor that I found out, you know, what was really wrong with me. And I have to say that being able to finally put a name to what I was going through and being able to talk about it to others made such a huge difference in my life. And it's interesting because it's still something that I struggle with. I certainly have learned how to push through it. I've learned, you know, the triggers that might put me in that space. But one of the things that really helps is to know that I can talk about it. And the thing that I like so much about your book is that perhaps people will read this and get an aha moment and say, you know what? This is something that I want to talk about because of how I'm feeling. You don't necessarily have to have a disorder to feel that it's necessary to talk about your feelings. I learned that by not talking about how I was feeling. That's why over time I developed this anxiety disorder. I started getting anxious because I wasn't talking about things. I was just all inside my head. And so that's one of the things that I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons why you say that. You mentioned earlier you called your disorder a blessing. Why do you look at it as a blessing?
I'm glad that you picked up on that.
Oh, most yeah.
So I've read a lot of forums, and I've been to, I've listened to people speak about having some type of mental illness. So, So through my life, I've had post-traumatic, I've had bouts of schizophrenia, I've had, you know, the bipolar side of things. So, you know, I do know that, you know, my mind's a little goofy. However, the reason why I am the man that I am today is because of the disorder. So I would not be able to be in the position that I am now to help other people without it. And so what I'm not a victim. And I want everybody out there to understand and know that if you have a disorder, you're not a victim. You have the right to stand up and voice what you feel and voice your opinions and talk to the people that love and care about you. And for me, I mean, that was the biggest push. Is it's, like I said before, it's a blessing. It's made me who I am. It's helped me build character. It's given me good work ethic, and it's also gave me the opportunity to relate to the other people in this world that have the same struggles that I do.
You know, it's interesting because just about 3 weeks ago, I posted on my Facebook, and I knew I needed to do this because it was an important step of me not getting, you know, into this cycle of anxiety. And I just, you know, said I had backslid, and I had been unable to get any work done for about 3 days because I was just locked. I was locked into this anxiety feeling. It's not even worry. It's just this anxious feeling. I don't have panic attacks. It's just a feeling that's debilitating. And I knew that the only way that I was going to get past this feeling was to, you know, rip off the Band-Aid and expose it to the world and say, this is how I've been feeling. And you know what, Justin? I was amazed at how many emails and text messages and phone calls I got from people thanking me, first of all, for being honest about the way I was feeling, because people think, you know, you look at me, you think, oh, she has it all together, even though they know I've had this disorder. I'm very honest about it. You know, I don't come across that way, and oh, she's probably cured now, she's fine. So it was amazing how many people, either they've been feeling this way before or they have other things going on, you know, around the mental health arena that has made them feel isolated and like they couldn't talk about it. And that's why what you're doing is so important. How has your life changed since you've written this book?
Oh, it's been incredible. Holy cow. Talk about a fun ride. So So growing up, you know, here again, I was always shy. I could hardly even speak a sentence in front of two or three people. You know, I was very socially awkward, which I still am a little socially awkward. And like I say, I'm still kind of a goofball. But over the last couple of years, I've started really enjoying the time to talk to people, and where it's benefited me, I think, is now I'm able to stand in front of, you know, 10,000 people and tell my stories and not be nervous about it, because I know that when I'm telling my stories, there are people in that crowd that know exactly what I'm saying. They have felt the same exact thing. And there's also people in that crowd that may not have a disorder, but they know someone who does.
Yes.
And typically it's a spouse. Mm-hmm. So if I get more emails from a spouse that doesn't have the disorder begging me to say, hey, look, what do I do? Now keep in mind, I'm not a medical professional. I'm not an expert on bipolar disorder. What I am, though, is I'm an advocate, and I'm a guy that lives with it. And so I can convey, you know, what I've done in my life, and what's always worked for me. And, you know, if it works for someone else, great. If it doesn't, it still comes back to that point of having a voice and talking about it. Once you talk about it, people will rally around you. People love you. People care about you.
It's interesting, because I think that's one of the fears, you know, about talking about it is, will people understand? Will you be rejected? Because we have this whole thing in our society about mental health. But I know from being a holistic living wellness and expert that when it comes to wellness, you know, it's a cyclical thing. You want to be well in your mind, your body, and your spirit. So if any of those things are off, then you're not totally well. So one person may be extremely healthy, but they've got other, in terms of their body, but they've got emotional issues. Or someone else may not be that, you know, healthy in their body, but, you know, but emotionally, they don't struggle with that. Everybody has something. And I Yes. think that perhaps we need to stop with the judgment and realize that everybody does have something. We just don't always know what it is, and perhaps be more open to just meet people where they're at. I think sometimes we have a tendency to be so judgmental, and we really don't know anyone's backstory, you know, what makes them the way they are. And I was curious, are there triggers or anything that you look out for when you think perhaps you're getting ready to slide into a manic stage or a depression stage? Or are there certain things that you look for, or certain things that you feel while you're going through, you know, your day-to-day?
Well, that's kind of, I think for me, and just, for, you know, kind of the way that my disorder reacts with me, okay, is that I don't know. Like, I don't physically know in my mind that I'm going through each phase. So I have the people around me that know my triggers, but, you know, when I'm laying in bed for a couple weeks at a time, I think it's just because I'm tired and I don't feel well. And so I lay there and I lay there and I lay there, and, you know, and then I get a little bit of motivation and I get moving, and then, you know, a month will go by and, you know, I'll do my work, but there's just no motivation there. And then it will turn into a manic side, where I'm super motivated and I can get everything accomplished done that I need to do, but then it gets out of control. But while I'm going through everything, I don't physically know that it's happening. I just know that I'm either bummed out or I'm really happy. So, you know, there are a few triggers for me that sometimes can spark a manic phase, which is adrenaline for a really, really, really long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when I'm in a race car for 12 to 13 hours, it's, you know, I get a pretty good adrenaline boost for a long time. And that can sometimes throw me into a manic, which I'm aware of now.
Mm-hmm.
So I do take different meds after racing and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, I mean, ultimately it's, you know, we don't, for me, I never really quite know when I'm in each phase, mm-hmm, but the people around me, the people who care about me, do, because I've explained it to them, and it's, I've opened my mouth and said, this is what I have, this is what I need you guys to look at,
mm-hmm,
and And if you see me doing something, I need you to bring it to my attention.
You know, I love that idea that you have that kind of support, because your loved ones know you the most. They know you the best. And it's interesting, the triggers, too, because I was thinking, wow, the very thing that you love doing is also the very thing that you have to be aware of in terms of how it impacts you so that you don't end up in a space that's not good for you. It's kind of a fine line. You're walking there, Justin, but I can tell that you love what you do. What's new in your racing career? What's coming up next for Justin Peck?
Oh, man. Racing world is just unbelievable. So I'm based out of Utah, mm-hmm. and just this week, I've decided to move my whole operation to San Diego.
Wow.
And which is, you know, I mean, it's kind of the mecca, at least in the Western United States, for racing and for off-road. And so we've moved the shop down there. You know, we've got 9 race cars. I've got, you know, I drive a lot. I've got a couple other drivers that I'm sponsoring now. And you know, we're fast. And we know that we're fast. And so, you know, we're going for championships. And you know, on top of that, one of the big and proudest things that I have now is, so I've got an 11-year-old boy, and he's been racing since he was 4. I put him in a car at 4 years old. So this is his first year that he gets to actually race in the national circuit. And so he gets to come to the big races with his dad, and you know, we get that father and son time. So there are a lot of good things happening.
That's fabulous that you're getting a chance to share that. I think there's nothing more fulfilling than to be able to share your passion with your children. That is wonderful. And I guess the other thing that's so great about that is how you've crafted such an exciting career. And I have to say, ladies, if you're not already looking at the picture, Justin's a good-looking guy. You yes. look like one of those, I know you don't do NASCAR, but it reminds me of NASCAR. And to tell you the truth, I never knew much about racing at all until I worked with a woman who was a NASCAR fanatic. So I was forced to learn and listen. So I know a little teeny bit about the world of racing, and it seems to be coming more and more mainstream. And I didn't even know that San Diego was a mecca. Boy, that's a beautiful place to move to.
I can't wait till I get to move there. So, you know, I stay in Utah because of the children, because of my support group. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, the Southern California is just, I mean, how can you beat 70-degree temperature year-round, right? And the ocean and
absolutely.
Stuff like
that. Absolutely. I live in California. I live in Northern California. And actually, as I'm looking out my window right now, it is dreary and ugly because we've been going through a bout of monsoon rain after a 5-6-year drought season, so I'm not complaining. But the good thing is that Southern California is like, 5-6 hours away or an hour plane ride away, so that you're going to love it there. Now, since you're going to be in Southern California, which is also the home of entertainment and movies and all that kind of good stuff, you've got a fantastic story. Any idea about taking it to the big screen or to the television screen?
Yeah, actually, so I've been hit up by several different producers and directors, and they've wanted to do some things with the book. I've turned them all down so far, mm-hmm. You know, but it's because I want it to be done on my terms. I want to have creative right, you know, with the book that I've done. It's all self-published. I didn't sell out. I didn't take it to a big publishing company. I did it all myself because I wanted to prove to myself that I could. And so with the movie and with what my plan is now is we're going to do a 30 to 45 minute short film, mm-hmm. Kind of reliving a little bit of me trying to commit suicide and have it done where we can start presenting it to like the Sundance Film Festival and a lot of these bigger ones. And it's all based on, the entire thing is not, so it's not based on me having fame. I don't care about fame. I don't care about any of that stuff. You know, success to me isn't zeros in my banking account. Success to me is about the smiles that are on my kids' faces. Mm. It's the success is, you know, about having integrity and having a good, strong character. So with doing a documentary, it's, for me, it is all about bringing awareness to mental health. And if I can do that, and if I can change one person's life, then my mission for me is accomplished.
I believe that you have changed people's lives. I believe that there's somebody listening to this program right now who is experiencing maybe a different way of looking at what they're going through mentally or emotionally, or what a loved one may be going through. That's why I love doing this show. I always say that if one person, just one person hears it and it makes an impact or a change in their life, then I feel like I've done the job that God has placed me on this earth to do. And it's been wonderful, Justin, to hear your story. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us. For those people who want to buy your Bulletproof, your book, where should they go?
You can buy it on the website at justinpeck.com. We have it on hardback, softback, and then also like digital download.
Okay, so you go to justinpeck.com to buy Justin's book, his memoir, Bulletproof, which is his story of his journey dealing with case one bipolar disorder. Thank you, Justin, so much for being on What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy. It's been wonderful having you.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a great time.
Absolutely. Wow, what an incredible story. And as I'm thinking, sitting here, I'm thinking to myself, you know, everybody has a story. Everybody has a backstory. And what I'm hoping when you listen to these podcasts for What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, that you're, you know, thinking of yourself or someone that you know that might benefit from by listening to this broadcast. So please share the podcast with others. I really appreciate that. We've had now maybe about 25 to 30,000 downloads per show. So people are out there listening. But my goal is to have a whole lot more people listening, not just because, as Justin said earlier, because of the fame and fortune, but also because I really do feel that there's some great information about your overall wellness that will help you to thrive, because I believe that we're all on this journey together and that we all kind of learn from each other and feed off each other to really live better lives. And before we go, I just wanted to remind all of you to make sure you check out www.whoami-id.com. They have wonderful products that keep you safe while you're working out. And I had an experience myself in using this product. If you've been putting off walking or jogging in the early morning hours or at night because of safety factors, your worries are over. This product really does enable you to be seen quite easily. And it's great for walkers, joggers, cyclists, people skating, whatever it is. You can just put the lead strips right on your clothes, and they have all your important information that you can write on a slip on the inside. So if something does happen, they have your emergency information right there. I know I've tried their product, and frankly, I feel much safer when I'm actually using their product. I can see, you know, much better in the early morning hours, you know, when the daylight's there, but I don't always have the time. Now, I feel much more comfortable going out in the dark morning hours. I like seeing the sunrise, so I enjoy being able to walk or jog or work out and know that I'm safe, too, at the same time. Go to www.whoami-id.com and find out more. And also, you can click on the ad. For those of you who are on the show page, there's an ad on my show page, and there's also an ad on my expert page. It'll take you directly to their website and take a look at their fantastic products. They will really help you to be safe and be seen. You've been listening to What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, and I'm so glad you've joined us today. Don't forget to listen to the other shows that we have. All of our shows are archived, and they're all meant to really help you along your journey to wellness. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Glynis, and I am a holistic living and wellness expert. I'll see you again next time.